think in large part all of our work boils down to in some sense about how organisms take multi different pieces of sensory information, integrate them, and then that leads to some sort of physiological change or behavioral change. And my talk will be no different. A large part of my talk today will be looking at how workers and harvester ants use both chemical cues and I'll also add social cues to mediate their behavior. But moreover, I also want to look at how colonies of these harvester ants change in response to the individual decisions made by the worker ants. And in particular today, I'll focus my attention on the regulation of foraging behavior in the harvester ants, and also how they use cues present in cuticular hydrocarbons. Probably no shock there if you've seen other social insect talks this at the meeting. Okay, what we're looking at right here is a harvester ant, Pogonomyrmex barbatus, colony mound. In reality, this is more of an ant's eye view, but in reality, it's about a meter in diameter, and in the center, I'm afraid to use this, but let me try it. In the center is the nest entrance. And if you approach a colony and look at it, you can actually detect the different jobs, or what I'll call tasks, ants are performing for the colony function. These will all be workers, members of thousands of workers within the colony. There's also a single queen, the mother of all those workers in this colony as well. And the most obvious are the foragers who are out collecting seeds, bringing them back into the nest entrance. Other workers include nest maintenance workers who you'll see transition from the inside of the nest entrance, taking pieces of seed husk, dirt from excavations, or even dead bodies and dropping them out here on the midden piles. And then the worker we see here, the task group, besides this one who's about to try to sting my camera, are patrollers who are the first ants to emerge each morning. What they do is they emerge prior to the foragers, patrol the nest mound area, as well as areas off of the nest mound, and then as they return back to the nest entrance, they stimulate foragers to actually exit the nest and begin foraging for that day. The foragers are collecting, it's difficult to conceive here, but they're collecting in chambers just inside the nest entrance. All right, this process I just described is called task allocation. And you know, I should really note first before I go on and forget that this work was done in collaboration, at least a large part of this work, with Deborah Gordon at Stanford University, if a lot of this sounds familiar to her work. The task allocation is the process by which colonies adjust the numbers of workers performing tasks in ways that's appropriate for colony needs. I've mentioned that these workers perform a variety of tasks. I should also note that there's no morphological differences between workers performing different tasks. And in fact, the ants will switch to different tasks as colony needs change. And just like in bee colonies, as they age, they tend to perform tasks that are outside of the colony. Regulation of work is, and this is an important component to this talk, is non-hierarchical in nature. In other words, there's not a boss, supervisor, ant telling the individuals what to do. Instead, the way we look at this, our perspective, is that individual workers receive social cues, including chemical cues and direct interactions with other ants. And those cues, in fact, inform their behavioral decisions. And what arises out of that, of course, are larger colony changes in behavior. Okay, this information that workers use is local by its very nature. It's difficult to imagine how a single forager, for example, would be able to assess what's happening in the other 9,000 ants that might be present in that colony. And the goal of my work is really to look at some of these proximate aspects, mechanisms behind how foragers, and it turns out these patroller ants, interact with each other to regulate work. Okay. I will talk about chemical cues, but as was mentioned in the introduction, I'm really dealing with contact cues, okay? So these are not considered to be volatile. These, in fact, are cues present in the hydrocarbon molecules that coat the surface of ants. They're there really primarily to prevent water loss and abrasion to the cuticle. It turns out that there are differences in the hydrocarbon profiles of ants performing different tasks, which allows for a bit of communication. As we look at recognition systems in ants, I think most commonly, and probably most papers here in social insects deal with nest mate recognition, which is simply the recognition of members of a colony versus intruders that might be coming into colony areas from outside colonies. There are also recognition of species. This is also mediated using hydrocarbons as well. And what I'm going to look at is really, obviously, within the colony, how differences in these chemical profiles, hydrocarbon profiles, can in fact be used as pieces of information by workers so that they can make behavioral changes. In other words, figure out, if you're a forager, when you should get up and leave the nest in search of food. Okay, so I mentioned I'm going to focus my presentation today on the interaction between these patrollers and foragers. And again, just to review quickly, we know that there's a relationship, a regulatory relationship between patrollers and foragers. If you go out in the morning to a colony, the beauty of an ant system is that you can look at the ants and then simply figure out what behavior they're doing and you can manipulate them. We can actually pick up patrollers, put them into a box in order to prevent their return back to the nest. And if we prevent the patrollers' return, we actually prevent foraging from that colony for that particular day. Okay, and then if you, at least within a reasonable amount of time, if you dump those patrollers out and they return, they will then again stimulate foraging. Okay, these chemical cues I've mentioned are part of cuticular hydrocarbons. This is just simply a gas chromatogram. So we have retention time on the x-axis with a scale for abundance on the y-axis. Each peak is meant to represent a different chemical. There could be mixtures of related chemicals in each of those peaks as well. And generally, the area under the peak represents what we'll call the relative abundance of these compounds. For clarity's sake, I want to mention that all the ants in the colony are, for the most part, going to have all the same hydrocarbon molecules present. They are, however, going to differ in their relative abundance. It turns out in these harvester ants that if you expose, let's say, nest maintenance workers that mainly work inside the nest, although they do transition out, to warm, dry conditions for a period of a week or so, they'll have more straight chain and alkanes in their profile than they did prior to the experiment. So environment clearly affects the expression of these hydrocarbons in this particular system. I should also note that when you look at different tasks, you can identify their tasks to some extent by looking at their hydrocarbon profiles. The easiest difference, of course, is to look at workers inside the net, working inside the nest versus outside. And you see this difference in at least relative abundance of these N-alkane molecules, which may play a role in waterproofing. Okay, my experimental method worked like this, and the main goal of this first experiment was to take advantage of work that had been done prior to when I started this project that showed there were task-specific hydrocarbon profiles. Now, because there are differences in profiles, that leaves open the opportunity that the ants could use that for as cues in regulating this particular system. My goal in this study was, in fact, to see if foragers were able to discriminate patrollers, hydrocarbons, from other types of hydrocarbons in the colony. Okay, simply what I did was I went out each morning, picked up patrollers to prevent them from returning, and what I could do then is watch the colonies. If there's no foraging within 30 minutes or no activity in that colony, what I would do is return little glass beads. These are about 3 millimeters in diameter, by dropping them into the nest entrance at a rate about one bead every 10 seconds. And I could coat these beads with hydrocarbons from patrollers. I could coat them with hydrocarbons from, let's say, nest maintenance workers, use blank controls, and so forth. So what I'm doing there is creating an ant mimic that takes away, really, the live ant and all its other chemicals that could be present and also its social interactions to see if we could get a foraging response when we add patroller hydrocarbons on these beads versus when we add, let's say, nest maintenance worker hydrocarbons in that experiment. And what we'll see is that was the case here. We're just looking at a foraging response in the y-axis versus the different stimuli I added. These were all added on different days using a repeated measures design, randomized order as well. The largest response occurred due to the return of live patrollers back. And you'll see that adding blank beads as well as nest beads coated with nest maintenance hydrocarbons elicited very little foraging, actually no foraging in most of the colonies. However, adding all the lipids extracted from the cuticle of the ants elicited high levels of foraging, as did the patroller hydrocarbon molecules. So as you can see, we knew starting out there were chemical differences in the profiles between two tasks, nest maintenance workers and patrollers. However, the foragers respond specifically to the hydrocarbons from the patroller task group. Okay, this is only part of the story because unlike what we traditionally look at in pheromone systems, just adding this chemical isn't going to elicit a response. It turns out that the way in which we add these ant mimics, in other words, how the pattern by which we add them back to the colony in an effort to mimic the return of patrollers matters. And it turns out that the rate at which patrollers return to a colony is part of the information, along with recognition of the chemical cue, that elicits this particular foraging response. So using the same type of situation, we're able to inhibit foraging by picking up patrollers and throwing them into a box. And then we added patroller-coated bees in this particular experiment at four different rates. Okay, and I have to say that I transitioned from working on snakes to ants when I was doing this study, and I had a lot to learn. But basically, I just took a look at a bunch of colonies, and when the patrollers returned at about this rate, in number three there, sorry, I lost my clicker, one ant every 10 seconds seemed to elicit a response. The goal here was to see if the rate of return of patrollers mattered in any particular regulatory manner. So we added beads back at a slow rate of about one bead every minute, a rate of one ant mimic for every 45 seconds, one per 10 seconds, and then this last one was about as fast as we could go, adding one bead every 1 second. The goal was to look at foraging responses in how foragers responded to these different return rates of patrollers. And we can see here that the ants are sensitive to rate as well. So we look at colony foraging levels in this particular graph. And on, of course, the x-axis are simply the different return rates that we simulated by dropping our ant mimics into the colony. Okay, what we see is we had a maximal rate at about one bead for every 10 seconds. Nicely verified what I so haphazardly started with in the first place. And we see very low foraging levels with the slower return rates, simulated return rates anyway. And we sort of see an in-between response when we add one bead every 1 second. If we watch a colony and actually observe patrollers coming back to the colony, we don't see foraging after return rates here of about these rates that I'm showing right here. Typically, this matches up very nicely with other experiments we've done, observational experiments. Probably what's happening here is I imagine that what we're doing with adding one bead every second is simulating maybe an alarm response where the patrollers are simply diving back into the nest entrance. Okay, in a second follow-up experiment to this, what we did is instead of picking up patrollers to stop foraging, in a way, we did something opposite of that. What we did is we observed patrollers returning back to the nest entrance, and prior to reaching that rate of one patroller returning every 10 seconds, what we did instead was we actually boosted the return rate of patrollers by adding our glass beads, our ant mimics, to the colony. The idea was, is if rate matters to informing foragers when they should get up and leave the colony, we should see earlier foraging in a colony that was supplemented with hydrocarbon beads or boosted with those hydrocarbon beads versus a colony that was treated with the control beads. And in fact, we saw that when you add the patroller beads, effectively what was happening is that colony was reaching that one ant returning every 10 seconds quicker. And in fact, foraging began about 20 minutes or so quicker in those colonies than they did with the control beads as well. Okay, and this is followed up with some newer data. In fact, this paper was just published in Behavioral Ecology a short time ago, which gets at another question, which is, in fact, in that more complex mixture of hydrocarbons on the cuticle, what information in there are those foragers using, in fact, to figure out who's a patroller versus maybe who's a nest maintenance worker? If we look out in the field, it turns out that once the patrollers are active, often those nest maintenance workers are active at the very same time. But it's very clearly the patroller return that's stimulating foragers from exiting the colony. As I mentioned before, the major difference between the two groups was the relative abundance of normal alkane hydrocarbons in there. So I took a very straightforward approach to this. My attempt here was to take the hydrocarbon profiles of nest maintenance workers, supplement them with an alkane hydrocarbons to artificially convert them, if you will, into patroller hydrocarbon profiles. So it's a very crude, maybe, yes, but as you'll see, a very effective way to, again, stimulate foraging in these colonies. Okay, what we did again is using our same our same protocol of picking up the patrollers to inhibit foraging, and then using the glass bead system again, dropping beads back in at one bead every 10 seconds. Incidentally, there was a paper just out with self-aware cockroach robots doing something like this, taking all my thunder away from my glass beads. I can't compete with robots at all here. And what I did is I added blank controls to colonies on one of the days of treatment, nestmate worker hydrocarbons, which of course we've already shown don't elicit foraging response, patroller hydrocarbons, and then in an attempt to turn nest maintenance worker hydrocarbons into patroller hydrocarbons, again, I supplemented them with two different levels of N-alkanes. These were done in the field, and I'm right now going through, I've confirmed most of them, and it turns out my treatments were actually pretty close to what I expected for adding about 10% and 5% N-alkanes to the relative abundance of their profiles. Okay, what we see is that, again, nest maintenance, worker hydrocarbons and blank controls elicit low levels of foraging, while patroller hydrocarbons elicit very high levels of foraging. And it turns out that by supplementing nest maintenance worker hydrocarbons with N-alkanes, I was able to trick the foragers, if you will, into thinking these were patrollers returning back to the colony. It's lucky it works. I can't explain all of the dynamics that are occurring by rolling little balls down nest entrances into the chamber with those. However, I have been able to at least mimic the response that patrollers elicit by doing these supplementation experiments, showing that the cue, at least in my simple interpretation, has to do with the relative abundance of N-alkanes in those particular profiles. These changes I made, I wanted to make sure what I wasn't doing was eliciting a nest maintenance response from the ants. And it turns out if you just compare the levels of aggression to my different treatments and the blank control here, they have very low levels. The harvester ants, when we work on them, they're undergoing their mating flights and they have a tendency to start to attack things on their mound. Luckily, they do it at very low levels with my different treatments. But if you put non-nestmate harvester ant hydrocarbons as a comparison, you'll see they have very high levels of aggression in there. All right, with that, let me stop and take questions. I certainly thank Deborah Gordon as well as a few funding sources for this work. Thank you. Yes, please. Right, yeah. That turns out to be, the answer in short is no at this point. The problem is this, is that to do that, we almost would, this all is all happening underground, obviously, and it's possible we could put a camera into the nest, but that turns out to upset the ants so much that we don't get the response we're expecting. The other easy way to do that would be to do it in the laboratory, but it turns out ants kept in the laboratory have a much simpler set of behaviors. It's hard to mimic this in the laboratory. It's something I'm thinking about and we're definitely going to work on, but I don't have those data yet. To be honest, it's amazing to me every time it does work, because obviously a live patroller can move around interacting with various foragers. A bead that moves in, what I have a feeling is the different foragers that start to become active in there kind of push the beads around in that colony. All I know is when I drop it, it goes down into the dark, and these are the responses we get back out. So I'm going to keep working on that exact issue. Thanks. All right, thank you.